Do you know what time it is? It's supernatural story time. And if you're easily scared, and even if you're not, there's only one thing left to do. Just turn off the lights, because these are stories that you listen to only in the dark. Mysterious Moments, Volume 1, Story 1. I was part of a crew whose job was to decommission old buildings that our agency was moving out of. We would clear the building out of all the office equipment and furniture and then turn it over for disposition. Some of the buildings got demolished and some got turned over to different branches of the military. Anyhow, the entire building in this story was a SCIF, S-C-I-F. It was 3 stories tall and built into the side of a hill during World War II. Top 2 floors were offices, and the lower floor was a warehouse space, cafeteria, and a loading dock. We had been working in this building for the better part of a year, and all the personnel had moved out by this point. I was working in the warehouse, prepping loads of equipment to be picked up by truck and shipped out. I was the only person in the whole building. In fact, the only other person in the whole facility was the guard at the front gate. So, I'm almost done prepping truckloads. I was about to leave when I see a little hole in the floor of the loading dock with light coming through it, which is odd considering the floor is solid concrete and this is supposed to be the basement. I peek down through the hole and I see a room with a desk and a chair. Must be a sub-basement. I explored around and found a flight of stairs going down. I went down and there's a whole floor of dusty old offices and stuff that haven't been used in years. Not only that, but the stairs kept going down. Turned out the place had 5 sub-basements. I found the old bomb shelter from World War II down there. The very bottom 2 levels were machinery for running the building, a lounge for the maintenance crew, and a small garage that came out the side of the hill. I had been working in that warehouse and loading dock for a while by then and had no idea all that stuff was down there below. Interestingly, during World War II, the work they did there was considered so important they built a fake neighborhood on the roof with fake houses and stuff so any enemy bombers wouldn't be able to spot it. Story number 2. Submariner here. There are a few things as unnerving as wondering about the engine room from 2330 to 0530 alone on watch. When the boat is largely shut down in port, it becomes a very quiet place. The roving watches usually make it an hourly game to speed through their long rounds, especially in the lower levels. One particular, in port period, the boat was moored in Pearl Harbor, and a few people started complaining about a real uneasy feeling. I was on the mid-watch as the SCO on evening, and a senior chief came back to do his required 0300 tour. We saw him walk past maneuvering on his way to Shaft Alley. This particular senior chief was the crusty old salt type and would usually spend a bit of time just sitting in the lower levels of the engine room alone and contemplate life, so we expected as much. What we didn't expect was him to literally run into the maneuvering area a few minutes later. The man was pale-faced and breathing heavily. We sat upright, our eyes as wide as his, thinking we were about to have to announce and fight some ship casualty. He slumps onto the EDO chair. A few tense and silent moments go by. We're on pins and needles. He finally opens his mouth and tells us about the effing ghost in Shaft Alley. Swears a sailor passes by him as he's sitting on a trash can in Shaft Alley. His first response was to call out to the guy, see who it was. But then he realized this guy isn't dressed right. He describes what this guy was wearing as the old World War II naval uniforms, so he quickly gets up to catch up to the guy, and he does. Catches up to him all the way aft. The guy turns towards the senior chief, looks right at him, then turns away and literally walks through the ass end of the boat. It's now that the senior chief decides it's time to leave Shaft Alley, and promptly does so. Swears up and down that he knows what he saw. I sure as hell wasn't about to leave maneuvering that night to find out for myself. Next story. I was stationed on an aircraft carrier commissioned in 77. There was never a lack of creepiness on that thing at night. I worked security on it at night, and we rotated from night to day every so often. I remembered one night, my buddy was heading up to the flight deck with a rifle from where our armory was on the first deck, up to the flight deck, 4th level, which is a 5-story difference. It's a lot of distance to travel alone at night. So He got to a certain part of the boat that was almost pitch black, one story down from the flight deck, and he hears these footsteps behind him. He looks back, and no one is there, so he picks up the pace, and as he does, he hears the same footsteps. He looks back, and this time he sees a dark figure about 30 feet behind him. At this point, he's F that, switches turn on, and he starts briskly jogging. He then hears the footsteps also pick up the pace and run after him. He dead sprints up the last flight of stairs up to the flight deck and hustles over to where we are on the front of the ship. He's white as a ghost and tells us what happened. We stayed away from that part of the ship from then on. Other than that, down the seventh deck of the ship, the second to last deck before you hit the hull, there were munitions storage areas, basically where we kept our bombs for planes. Well, back in the day, a little girl fell down one of these ladder wells, which is a six-story drop to the bottom. She ended up dying. There's chains and various other items that can't be moved, and they say at night, if you're not paying attention, zoning out, she'll come by and rattle the chains hanging from the ceiling and move things. The fantail, which is in an area that is outside the ship that looks over the water on the back of the ship, there are multiple ghosts that F with you, two lookouts that stand out there if you're ever one of them. One of the ghosts is a little girl. You'll hear her giggling, then a bouncy ball bouncing on the deck out there, then a splash in the water. There's also a ghost that will come to you as you're nodding off on the watch. He'll be in dress uniform. He'll tap you on the shoulder and say, "Don't report this." Then he'll jump into the water. Other than that, it was always a constant feeling of being watched at night, especially if you are alone in certain areas. Next story. I have a buddy who told me a story that he probably made up, but it makes a great ghost story nonetheless. I'll recall the story to the best of my ability, but I will not be able to do his story justice since I haven't heard the story in a few years. According to him, it was all classified. He was stationed at a base in the Middle East somewhere. The base was surrounded by a wall that had guard posts at various locations around the wall and one or two other locations that soldiers would keep post, including barracks. There was also a big abandoned warehouse on the base that was not being used. It had huge heavy doors that opened outward from the middle, which were always closed. Soldiers had to walk past this warehouse when switching post. Well, one night, my buddy was in his barracks. Gunshots go off. Everyone rushed to get geared up and figure out what was going on. Once they figured out the gunshots came from inside the base, they went to the location of the shots. Two soldiers were posted up, guns pointed to the old warehouse, and they were freaked out. One of the doors to the warehouse was pushed slightly open. They yelled at the two soldiers to see what was going on, but the guys wouldn't budge. They said that something big and black had just run inside the warehouse. Once they calmed down, the two guys did a sweep of the warehouse and found nothing. It took two soldiers to push the door shut again. The next night, there was screaming coming from inside the warehouse. They did a sweep, nothing. Next night, more screams. Third night, another group of soldiers, shifting locations, opened fire. They basically had the same story as the first group. They said it was fast and basically moved faster than they could aim and shoot. Again, the door was pushed open. It took two guys to close it. After this went on for a while, and the soldiers were found mentally healthy, a bigger investigation was set up. They pointed some special cameras at the entrance to the warehouse, set up some guys outside, and waited for something to happen. Well, one night, the door was pushed open on camera, and it was basically a demon that stepped out and started screaming bloody murder. The guards opened fire, and the thing sprinted faster than humanly possible back inside the warehouse. Both doors were flung open, and the thing just screamed. More soldiers came and did a sweep, nothing. Around this time, the soldiers at the base started to piece a few things together. They had always known that a village near the base had a curfew, and no one stayed out of their houses past nightfall. So some went to investigate why, and long story short, the villagers told them that there was a god of death in the area, and they dare not stay out past nightfall. Around the time they learned this, a special team came in with more equipment. Some bigger gunners were sent in, including my buddy, with special recording equipment. They dragged the big double doors open and set up inside the warehouse. It was pitch black, but they could still see their equipment. They set up so two guys sat facing each other, making a square of four guys total. About 4 hours went by without anything happening. Then the guys across from my buddy starts making a hand signal. He was signaling that something was behind my friend. The guy to the right of my buddy was dozing off, and the other soldier across from my buddy was perfectly still. My buddy did a 180 from his chair to a crouch position, giving room for him and the guy across from him to open fire. He said when he turned around, he just saw this humanoid demon, around 9 feet tall, piercing eyes and as menacing as possible. When he opened fire, the thing was so fast, it basically teleported to the side and up the wall until it was on the ceiling. They continued to open fire, but the thing was fast and kept appearing behind each of the soldiers, endangering them. Eventually, the soldiers got the equipment and abandoned the building. The cameras apparently captured everything. My friend was debriefed and told to never speak of it again, and the building was demolished. The villagers related the demon to an old mass grave near the base, which after the events above was dug up and everyone given a proper burial. Without a doubt, I couldn't recall everything correctly. His version had more detail. The way my buddy tells the story is so convincing and detailed that it's hard not to believe him. Next story. I was in the Navy from 2001 to 2006. I saw some messed up things, but this one took the cake. I was stationed in Norfolk, Virginia, and at my squadron, our supply officer was this really nice guy. A bit of a nerd type, but overall, really chill and down to earth. Always went out of his way to help people, and would also give us extra gear if we asked. I'd even been to his house a few times for cookouts and just to hang out. He would take leave a lot, though, and often leave early on Fridays. Around the same time, 2004-2005, local police department had a crazy investigation on their hands. Suitcases full of human body parts were either washing ashore or being found on the side of the road. Nobody could figure out who was doing it or why. I mention this because a few weeks go by, and an all-squadron email has gone out saying that the supply officer's wife has gone missing, and if any of us had seen or heard anything about her, whereabouts to report it immediately. Of course, nobody comes forward with any info because nobody knew he was married. I'd been to his house and never saw any photos of him with his wife. To me, it seemed like a typical bachelor pad. Anyway, a week goes by, and police search teams find a body in the woods, and it's confirmed to be her. It's all over the news that they found her, and when they interview him, he's stone-faced, like zero emotion at all. After a lengthy investigation, he confesses to killing her and dumping her body in the woods. He also confessed to putting one of the suitcases of body parts on the road, but not any of the others. This shook me up because I felt like I knew the guy pretty well. We joked around a lot at work, and it just seemed like such a normal guy. But that's the key word, seemed. Next story. One time I was working nights in the munitions storage area, which is fenced off with barbed wire. The whole area is pretty spread out with multiple buildings and definitely large enough that you generally drove around to get to other buildings. Due to the nature of the job, the buildings are spread out with clear space between them. Anyway, the only people in the bomb dump on this night are the roughly eight or so of us in my shop and one guy in control that night. He was in another building and we had a direct line to him on what we called the bat phone. That's relevant later. It's summer in South Carolina, about 2 or 3 a.m., so the air is warm and very still. No breeze at all, and we had the break room door open while we watched the movie. We were on flight line support standby and nothing was going on. Now, the rumor was the small building we worked out of had been built by German POWs during the war, and I know for a fact that there were some there back then. It was a small, with a main break room, small dispatch office through a doorway, and a couple of offices off of that one. There were two doors, one in the break room and one on the same side of the building in the dispatch office, roughly 20 to 30 feet away from each other. Both had push bars on the inside, but only the break room door could be opened from the outside, as the dispatch door external latch was busted, and only the internal bar worked. Well, all of us minus the guy locked down in the control building for security are in the break room when suddenly ka-thunk, loud, comes from the dispatch door in the next room. It was like someone was rushing through, slammed the push bar, and the door swung open, then swung back, shut after a couple of seconds, with a slam. We all looked at each other like, what the? I started to check it out. We had mag lights in our crew book, so a few guys grabbed them and swept around the building from both directions. Another guy called the controller on the bat phone, who picked up and denied that he was messing around with us. There was no way he could have messed with us and made it back to his phone in time, let alone doing it without being seen or heard. Anyone with experience knows how sound carries at 3 a.m. in a South Carolina summer. You could hear the beeps from code keys being pressed hundreds of yards away, no joke. No way he hoofed it back to his building anywhere near fast enough, gone through the halls, punched in his code, and got to the phone in time. But the shit that got me was that damn bar. The door simply did not open from the outside, and we all heard that bar get pushed in hard. The door swing open, hang there for a couple of seconds, then shut, and there was absolutely no breeze. And had there been one, it would have blown past us sitting in front of the only other door. Very weird. As an aside, there would be random times that I would go to pick up a trailer or something behind one of the other shops at the far end of the bomb dump, and as soon as I stepped out of my truck to do my inventory, I would get a super bad vibe. I'm talking the heebie-jeebies like no other. As best as I can describe it, I felt like something was right above and behind me and just hated me being there. Just seething anger, rage, and hate. And it wouldn't go away until about 15 minutes after driving away from that building. One night, another driver who had arrived there shortly before I had for a trailer asked if I had a weird feeling there, which sure as shit I did. So I know at least one, or at least someone else corroborated it. All of this was on midshift, which was 11 to 7:30 a.m. I heard a few other people's stories about weird stuff that would happen at night, but since they aren't my stories, I can't vouch for their veracity. The only other thing that happened to me there was, I swear, I caught the clear silhouette of a guy walking in an open field between igloos. As I turned to punch my gate code, out of the corner of my eye, I distinctly caught the motion of two legs and an arm sticking out like someone mid-stride. When I turned back, it was just an empty field. That one could have been my mind playing a trick, but man, that place was really creepy. It's been damn near 15 years, but it still gives me the chills to think about it. Next story. It's Navy Boot Camp Orlando. I was alone on watch in our company's barracks compartment. I was checking all the windows because the CC liked to unlock one or two to make sure we checked them all. That put me between the racks, the bunk beds, and the wall. I caught movement down the middle open area of the compartment. A flash of white. White shoes meant brand new recruit. We had been there long enough to wear black Oxfords. I went between the racks to the middle so I could see who had come into the compartment. The outside door definitely hadn't opened, and I would have heard the door by the inside stairwell. The door to the laundry area was locked. Standing across the open area by the other row of racks was a girl, with curly dark hair, wearing the same female utilities as me, light blue shirt, black pants. She was wearing the white tennis shoes, which meant she had only been there a couple of weeks. She looked at me, then she wasn't there. No place for her to go. We were in the middle of the compartment, yards from any door, and nowhere to hide. I didn't see her move. She just wasn't there one moment to the next. Only saw her for a heartbeat or two. Spookier still, years later, our new FN was telling about doing a roving patrol watch at boot camp and how they kept finding a pair of white sneakers in the locked laundry room of an empty compartment. Freaked her out. Said the red lights always looked darker in there. They'd do their checks and leave as fast as they could. Thought one of the CCs was playing a joke with the shoes. I asked which building, which wing, which floor. Yep, my old compartment where I had seen the girl. Next story. I used to be stationed in Fort Irwin in California. It's a long story, but there's a 30-mile road that leads from Barstow, which is the closest town, into the base, which is in a large, empty desert. There are dozens of crosses along the road leading into the base from soldiers and family of soldiers who have had accidents on this road throughout the years. Anyway, a buddy of mine, who was my platoon mate, and I were driving back from the mall in Victorville one night. As we entered the starting stretch of Fort Irwin Road, I noticed some fresh, bloody tire marks leading off the side of the road directly into a cross, which was dated something like 8/11/1989. Really creeped me out. I thought I was seeing things. About 20 minutes into our long drive down this isolated two-lane highway leading into the vast, empty desert, I looked over to my buddy who was driving and lip-syncing to some song. And then, as we're going about 75 miles per hour, something darted out in front of us. I quickly caught a glimpse of what looked like a large humanoid beast with fur and a wet, hairy face. It looked directly at us even though we were going 75 miles an hour, and it was running right across his car. The thing was tall, at least 7 foot, walking on two legs, but the eyes were like, I don't know how to explain it, but for that split second when it turned to look at us, as it turned its body, and I looked into its eyes, it was like time slowed down, and its eyes were white voids. Not a reflection, really, more like deadlight, using a Stephen King reference, and it wasn't a look of fear, but it was a look of, I see you, hello. It was the most skin-crawling thing I've ever experienced. Whatever it was not human, not animal. It was sentient, but not like we are. I won't say it had powers, but whatever it did to us when we looked at it, I don't know. I turned to my friend who yelled out, holy shit! And then the thing, it ran off to the other side of the highway. My buddy thought that we'd almost hit someone, so we stopped and got out to check. But whatever it was ran off into the empty desert night, and then he began to repeat. Large hairy bird? No. Not a bird. Bear? Bear? No. Oh, what was that? It took us about another 20 minutes to get to the basin. We just sat there, music off, not talking to each other. He was quiet, which he was never quiet. Now, Brian, I tried to think of what to say, but we were chilled to really talk. Once we got back to base and told our squad members about what happened, no one believed us. That is, until a few weeks passed by, and I started hearing quiet murmurs from people who didn't want to speak openly, but they said they saw similar sightings too. Years later, after I got out of the service, I did some research online and learned about Native folklore passed down by indigenous Native Americans who claimed that Sasquatch was believed to live out in the barren salt flats. Whatever it was, my friend turned white as a ghost that night, and we never spoke of it to each other again. Next story. United States Marine Corps. I was an infantry machine gunner. My first tour in Iraq was back in 05. My unit was stationed at a dam in Haditha, 10 stories high and 10 stories below. We occupied all of the above-ground levels as living quarters and offices, and only two levels below. Those were for interrogations. Anyway, we had heard that beyond the second sub-level there were chilling sights, and that this place was a known area where Saddam would torture people. One night, me and two of my friends say, let's go down and see what's at the third level. From there we judge if we would go further down. We spotted a bloody handprint that dragged across the wall. Someone's shoe left behind in a whole lot of mess. It was kind of creepy, but not too bad. I wasn't scared yet. So we walked down the hall and decided, hey, let's climb this ladder, go into this room and have a smoke. At this point, it's about 1 a.m. The only other Marines awake would be those on guard at their post, and no one should be anywhere near us or looking for us. Well, while we're smoking and joking, someone coughed out loud, but it wasn't either of us. We got real quiet, thought maybe it had been some officer that could hear us or smell the smoke and was trying to catch us in an unauthorized area. So we waited silently. One of us did a recon on the hallway we came from. No one was there. At that point, we were like, yep, we need to get out of here. Climb back down the ladder and walked out the back way to make sure there wasn't anyone else playing a joke on us. Well, it was just us three on the third sub-level. Earlier that deployment, I had told some of my other friends we should try to venture to the last sub-level. But after this incident, I never went back to the sub-levels. I don't think any of my friends did either. Went to Iraq thinking IEDs were the scariest thing I was going to encounter. Nope. Next story. This took place on Fort Carson Army Base, Colorado Springs, Colorado, in the summer of 2011. I'm a civilian, so I'm not accustomed to the military life, but I have had odd occurrences from being a contractor on nearby military bases. This was strange, and you tell me what you think. So I'm working on an Army base with two other individuals, doing invasive weed surveys at known locations where specific invasive species have been mapped for several years. The area we were at was a small grassy field next to the parking lot of a veterinarian clinic on post. The three of us are doing our vegetation surveys for a couple of hours in the afternoon, and we're all staring at the ground, counting plants and identifying each species. We're in between a road and the parking lot, so we see traffic coming and going. At about 3:30, the veterinarian clinic closes, and there's only two or three vehicles in the parking lot. We assume the employees are just finishing up, and they're going to be closing. And sure enough, we see two ladies come out the front door and then leave in their vehicles. So the only vehicle is our own work truck. As we're slowly making it through the arduous task of cataloging invasive weeds, specifically at this site field, bindweed was a nuisance, an SUV drives into the parking lot and then backs up into a parking spot near the end of the building. One guy in army fatigues jumps out, runs up to the building to open the door, and props it open. The other guy gets out and opens the cargo area on the SUV. Then the two men in fatigues pull another guy who appears to be unconscious out the back of the vehicle and carry him into the building. We couldn't see into the back of the vehicle due to being on the other side of the parking lot. All three of us saw this and looked at each other like, what did we just see? About 10 minutes later, another vehicle comes into the parking lot. It's a Toyota Prius, so we assume it's the personal vehicle of whomever is driving. And this guy in civilian clothing gets out, walks up to the side entrance that the other two men carried their unconscious comrade through. We were perplexed and trying to understand what we just saw. We had no idea what could have been going on. Just a note to anyone that's listening to this, there was a huge hospital on the base, and it was less than a quarter mile away from our location. So we really couldn't understand why an unconscious man would be taken through a side door of a veterinarian clinic after hours by two men. Next story. I've only told this story once before to the grown children of one of the men that died. I'll say now that I suffered from lack of sleep as well as shock when a man attempted to rape me, which caused even more stress. The day before, three men in my unit died. I was casual friends with one, and the other two were respected officers. I didn't see them die, but I saw most of what was left. That shock added to almost 2 days and nights without sleep, and then to be attacked, well, it's understandable that I might have hallucinated. When he attacked me, I remembered what the instructor in a rape prevention class had said. Use anything if you're going to fight back, and remember, your best weapon is your mind. He was attacking me, and I knew there would be no help coming since we were in an isolated area. I looked away to the side, and I swear I saw the three men who had died the day before. I saw them as clearly as I saw my attacker. One of them, the enlisted one, nodded to me as if to say I would be okay. As if that were the signal to my brain, I started hysterical, I guess you'd say babbling, about how I was going to die just like what happened to my friends the day before. I described the carnage of the remains and told them I would be joining them soon. I don't have any idea what went through my attacker's head, but he stopped grabbing me and even set my clothes to rights and started apologizing over and over. From his words, I gathered he was Catholic, and I told him I needed to go to confession and talk to the priest. Then I got the hell out of there as fast as I could. Is there such a thing as double shock? If I hadn't seen them, I might never have tried what I did. Or maybe they suggested it. I don't know. Ghost or a hallucination from an overtaxed mind? You decide. Me, I don't want to decide one way or another. It just was. I saw them. They were dead and had died the day before. They saved me or saved myself or both. This has bothered me for almost 40 years, even if it was a hallucination. I can't help feeling that they saved me.